Accession number 27258, Mr. Len Stockhill, Reel 6. Now, we're talking about when you went on board HMS Archer. You were, what? Now, what rank were you at this time?
I was AB, able seaman.
So you'd lost most of your rank.
Yes, but we were being promised that we would get our ranks back eventually once we you know, got settled in.
And so what happened then?
Well, they decided that they were going to have this ship repaired. It was an engine job. And they were waiting for a dry dock at Gairloch in Scotland. It was a big dock. But we were waiting quite a while, and then...
So you didn't actually go on an Arctic convoy, a Russian convoy with her?
She'd only just come back. And we were going to go down to Gairloch, as I said, but there was a battle wagon took its priority over us, and they had to go in. So they sent us across to Belfast, to a dockyard there. And it was while we were in Belfast that we had a week's leave, and we went from Larne to Stranraer, and then by train from there down to Hartlepool, and then back again. By this time, obviously the shipwrights and that had had a good look over it, and they decided that it wasn't worth repairing, so they were going to convert it back into a merchantman. So we were discharged and sent back down to Chatham.
Now, when was this?
This was 43, you know.
Still 43?
43, yeah.
And this is not at the gunnery school, this is just at Chatham?
Just the Chatham depot. Well, whilst I was in the Chatham depot, I met this lad that had been sent up to the gunnery school with in the first place, when we first went on. Alf Acaster, they called him. He was in the drill shed, and I said, "Oh, Alf, what are you doing here?" Because he was in the army with me, he transferred over. And he said, "Oh," he said, "I'm going to see the drafting master at arms." He said, "I'm on the Cowdray." I said, "The Cowdray, where's that?" "Oh," she said, "she's in the dock here at Chatham. It's a Hunt class destroyer." So I said, "Oh, is there any chance of me getting on with you?" He said, "Well, I'm going to drafting master of arms, come." So we went to see this drafting master of arms in his office, and we spun him the tale that we were old shipmates from the army, and we'd been together ever since during our training at Ganges, etc. "Was there any chance?" He said, "Oh yes, we want another gunner's yeoman." So Alf had been taken on board as gunner's yeoman, and I got a job as gunner's yeoman, which was just sort of, I was on the guns. I was there to supervise any cleaning of the guns.
Now, we'll come to that. What type of a ship was HMS Cowdray? Can you describe her?
Yes, she was an Uncrass destroyer at that time. But when they were after the war, they were sort of commissioned as frigates.
No, I mean, so at this time she was a Hunt-class destroyer.
Hunt-class destroyer, that's what they
And what called. Did you think of the ship? I mean, what was your, you know, you'd been on this quite big ship, the merchant ship. What did you think of the Cowdray?
Very neat and compact. Not much room at all. Every space was occupied, no matter what.
Now, what was your mess deck like?
The mess deck, you couldn't move for hammocks swinging about. There would be about 11 men in two messes on the midships. And, of course, that was 22 hammocks you had to be swinging about on that mess deck. And to get from one side to the other, you had to dodge in between the hammocks. This was after they were all put up at night time.
What did you think of the hammock? I mean, you wouldn't have had them much before.
No, I'd never experienced it before. Because on the Archer, we had bunks. And I was issued with a hammock, but never ever used it when I was on Archer.
So So what did you think of it early on?
I thought it was quite unusual, but we soon got used to them. We did take our own sheets, because all you were supplied with was a navy blanket, and there were the expression we used to use was half inch thick, and had two black lines running through them. And when we asked what the black lines were for, she said, "Well, when their black lines disappear, they were ready for washing." So we had what they call stretchers at the head of your hammock, and this was a wooden bar with a notch cut in each end, which spread the ropes on the hammock out, so that you could get your pillar in and lay in the hammock proper. The bottom end didn't matter, because that curled round your feet. Of course, we'd already been taught at Ganges how to rope an hammock up, and it was roped up with all your bedding inside it, and this line, and you had a rope that swung, tied all the way around it, and then it was stored in a rack, so that if there were holes in if you got shell hole in the side, the hammocks were all in there, they didn't float about, or they knew where they were to be able to plug the hole with. This was what we were taught. And then we had to get used to the guns.
Hang on a minute. Now, when did you... Was it 1944 by the time you joined the cavalry? I'm just wondering, because I noticed you have convoys to Antwerp. That must be in 44, 45.
44, early 44 by this time. Yes, it would be by the time we'd swung round the buoy at Loch Olsh and went across to Belfast and then come back. Yes, it would be early 44. Well, we sort of practiced on the guns.
Now tell me about the guns.
Well, the guns were twin 4-inch, quite good and new, and we soon got to know them.
Now tell me what your job was as a gunner's yeoman on those 4-inch guns.
Well, a gunner's yeoman, I was on the I was gun layer, because I knew I was a gun layer in the army, and the rudiments were very, very similar. And I was taught how to use the traversing sight.
How do you use it?
Well, you had a wheel in front of you, and you turned the wheel and watched through your open sight towards your target until your target appeared, and then you looked through your telescope. And then the elevation layer, he did the same, and as soon as he saw the target, he got onto it for his range. And then there was also an open sight on the side of the which was very similar to the 6-inch guns and the army, an open sight on the side. Well, we went up to
now, they weren't in turrets, were they? They were just open.
There was a shield. They weren't a turret, they were a shield.
And how many twin 4-inch did they have?
They had three twin 4-inch.
Two at the front, one at the back?
It was
two sets.
Wait a minute. No. One at the back, two at the front. One just below the bridge and then another one. No, I'm wrong. There was two at the front. Then there was an Orlikon. Pom-pom, I should say, and then another four. So it's like two twin 4-inch. I used to have a photograph of it, but
look at a photograph at the wall, in the museum.
Can't put my hands on it at the moment.
Now, when you first got on the ship, as a gunner's yeoman, you're still just an able seaman, aren't you, really?
Able seaman, yes.
Now, it was a new ship, was it?
Well, no, it had been commissioned for about 18 months, but this was a new commissioning. It had been refurbished and whatever they did to it, I don't know.
Did you have any trials, then?
Yes, we had a run-up up to the Orkneys and the Firth of Clyde, Firth of Forth.
Based around Scapa?
Around by Scapa Flow. We were based in Scapa Flow, and we just did the in the straits between Scapa and the north of Scotland.
And what do you remember of the trial? What sort of thing were you doing on the trials?
Well, we were doing gunnery trials, firing off rounds of ammunition, which we found as gunners, we found very interested. Because where we used to put a separate cartridge in the after the shell, we had fixed, what are called fixed shells, with a large brass container for the cordite. Of course, after the gun was fired, that shell case came out, which was entirely new to us. Round the gun platform was a 3-foot-high rail and shield, metal shield, and of course the shell case used to bounce off that, and they used to be rolling about till you were able to sling them over the side. I could never understand why they used to sling them over the side. I said, because they had nowhere to keep them.
I mean, it was a waste of metal, brass or whatever it was. I'm not sure.
Well, brass or copper, one of the two. I think it would be brass. But nevertheless, we also had Orlikans, which were mounted each side of the bridge. And we...
Now, you weren't on them at all?
We're going to try on them, you know, in case he'd got to replace somebody. So I'd got an all-round sort of feeling of the guns and everything. But one thing we didn't go on was the pom-poms.
What were the Orlikans like to fire?
Orlikans were quite good, you know. They were... when you compare it to a Bren gun, it was quite different. In so much as he got a heavier bullet going out of it. Well, they used to call them shells. And they were belt driven, whereas the Bren gun was a pan, a curved pan. But mainly I was on the 4-inch, and they were my I couldn't say pride and joy, although we used to keep them perfectly.
Now tell me about maintenance of the 4-inch. What did you have to do to keep them twin 4-inch going? That was part of your job, wasn't it?
Well, this was it. We had to keep them greased on account of the salt atmosphere, and keep them covered when they weren't, grease them, and then keep them covered.
What do you mean
especially
covered?
Especially the breech blocks. They
With
were
what?
Sort of all metal, shiny metal. They weren't painted over. Other parts of the gun that weren't sort of movable, or like the back of the barrel and the side of the trunnions, they were all painted. But the breech block and the breech were all white metal, steel.
So how would you cover it?
Well, we had a canvas cover which we put over and fastened with cords. But before you did that, you made sure that every part was oiled and greased.
Now, one thing I would ask, did you have any seasickness? Because, I mean, it's pretty rough up by...
I found that the first 2 or 3 hours out to sea, after leaving harbour, I was seasick. But then after that, I was all right. It was just the first leaving harbour. And say, if we swung round the buoy overnight in Scapa Flow, the same thing would happen. As soon as we got out the open sea, I would feel seasick for the first couple of hours.
Would you actually be sick, or would you just feel...
No, I was just feeling sick. And then I got over it.
And that happened every time you went to sea?
Every time, yeah. But you got over that queasiness.
Now, what about the watch system? Can you explain what the watch system was on the Cowdery when you got going?
What the?
The watch system, how it worked.
The watch on, it was 2 on and 4 off. No, 4 on and 4 off, sorry. Until you come to the middle watches, which was just 2 hours. That's so you can get a full changeover.
And what would you do during the watches? What was it? What would you do when you were on watch?
We had the gun watch, which we were on the gun platform, much the same as the army. We would also go on the bridges, lookouts. You get a tent. There were signalmen who would go on the bridges, lookouts during action. But during normal sailing, you'd got to take your turn in your watch. Sometimes on the guns, which is only an hour, and then the change is over, and sometimes on the bridge as lookout on one of the...
Now, what was it like being lookout on the bridge?
Well, you got a pair of binoculars, and you just sort of scanned the horizon and reported anything that you saw.
All of it, or just in a certain segment?
Just on where you were watching. If I was on the starboard side, I would watch all the starboard side. And then if there was any report, you would give a bearing of your arc of watch, whichever it was. You'd sing this out to the officer of the watch, such and such bearing, so and so, green so and so. And the port watch would do the same, you're singing out that the whatever it was, bearing red, so and so.
Anything else about watch when you're on watch?
Watch keeping, not really.
What would you do when you're off watch then?
Well, if you were in harbour, if you were duty watch, you stopped on board and you were there sort of just on board doing nothing, but you were there if anybody wanted anything, or if we got orders to go to sea, you got everything prepared, and the Liberty men were called back. Because they used to send out the naval patrols, and they would go around the different places and tell the crew that the Cowdray was going to sea, get back. In the meantime, the duty watch that was on board would prepare the ship for sailing.
Now, how do you do that?
Well, they would single up the lines that tied them to the dock or to the buoys, so that you would just add one forward line and one aft line, securing the boat to the dock side. And as the Liberty men would come back on board, the duty coxswain was there to watch them and make sure. And he sort of, once he'd got a record of them all being on board, then they could put to sea.
So when you were on watch, would you also have to clean the ship?
Well, I mean, during the daytime hours, you know, up till sort of tea time, you clean ship round.
Now tell me about
whatever.
That.
Well, if you were a gunner's crew, you were you're on your guns, cleaning your guns down. If you were sailors, able seamen, you cleaned the ship part up. You know, you swabbed the deck and you made sure that the lines were laid down, your ropes and that were all laid down, and everything secure. They checked the lifeboats, make sure that the davits were all right, the handles were okay, working, things like that, all seamanship type of things. But the gunners would look after their guns.
Now, what about the catering system? The messing system.
On the Archer, the messing system was what they called, they got a name for it.
There's canteen, there's general.
Well, general messing was on the Archer. That was general messing because their American type cookhouse, galley, it was marvellous. But on the destroyer, it was mess catering. And there was a tanky, what they called a tanky, looked after the shop, and you had an allowance of what you could spend, and your mess caterer, we used to call him, was elected each day, and he used to go to the shop and he used to ask for whatever commodities he wanted. We had on the mess deck, we had flour bins and oats in bins, and we just sort of kept them replenished whenever they were needed. I got the job quite a lot of being mess caterer because I could make a good duff, as we used to call it, and make a good pot mess.
Now, what was the secret of that then?
Well, it was just suet, flour, and lots of fruit. And we used to tie it up in a big piece of canvas into like a big ball. And I used to take it up to the galley, and the chef, used to just cook it in boiling water. And then, of course, when it was ready, and the cooks went up to the galley to pick the stuff up, this duff was brought down and uncovered, and we made custard, and we had it with custard. But the pot mess...
Tell us about that.
Well, the pot mess was, if you'd bought any meat, you cooked the meat, and then you put everything in it that you could, tins of vegetables, tins of tomatoes, and that's why they call it a pot mess, you know, and it was just like a big stew. And of course, you could drop doughboys in there. And as I say, I got the job of doing them. But they were just plain flour and suet and seasoning. And they were dropped in this stew about a quarter of an hour before they brought it down on deck.
Were there any other favourite meals, either you made or other lads made?
Nothing I can bring to mind.
Now, what was the food like?
Very good. Everybody used to like mess catering because you'd got a choice. You could decide among yourselves what you wanted.
Now, what about the rum ration? What about that?
Well, your grog, that was... He had what they call a rum rat. He went and fetched the rum every day. And what it was two parts water and one part rum. And the tankie had a good job. He used to go down below the mess deck, below the stoker's mess deck in a forward hold, and he used to bring up these jars of rum with a basket round them. And depending on how many was on the ship was how many of these that they had. And this was mixed under supervision of an officer of the day in this large container. So much water and equal parts of rum. Two parts water and one part rum. And you had a measure, special measure, and each mess sent their representative, like the rum rat they used to call him, up to this particular place on the ship, and there was the cask, and it was brass bands on, God bless the Queen or King, there on the front, King it was. And the tankie dipped his can in the water, and then poured it into your tin. And if you had 11 on the mess deck, you got 11 in the dip. And there's a ritual about this. The tankie, the rum rat that went up for the rum, when he dished it all out into the different whatever containers that they had, because he went up and fetched it, he used to get what are called sippers. He had a little sip out of each one. But if it was your birthday or you'd done something, you won the VC or something like that, you got gulpers. But this was just the one. They say it was my birthday, I would get gulpers off every one in there. But
that get you drunk?
Oh, yeah. Well, you had a good sleep, I'll put it that way. It didn't exactly make you drunk, but made you light-headed and sleepy.
Did you like the rum?
You got used to it.
You didn't like it at first, then?
Didn't not at first. Well, I'd never been a spirit man. I'd always been beer. And I didn't like it, but you got acquired the taste. But to drink the neat rum, which the petty officers and the officers got, it was like drinking tar. It was really thick and... oily. I could never take that. The that was the what they call the pusser's rum. But the drink, the grog, you could drink all right.
What about Kai? Cocoa, I think it was.
Oh, yeah.
Did you get that?
Yeah, you used to get Kai. Kai, you used to be big blocks of like chocolate or air stuff. And you scalded that down into a bucket and stirred it round. And it was quite thick. And they reckon that if you drank this and ate two of the Puss's biscuits, which were hard tack, ate two of them and a drink of this cocoa, Kai, whatever they call it, you'd never be seasick. See, because he said the Kai and the biscuits get into a big bowl and you couldn't throw that up. But it was quite good, especially if you were out on watch on the deck, either in the and the lookout or on the deck, on the gun deck. You got a big mug of that and it warmed you right through.
Now, what about other things? You know, how did you get on with the other lads on the mess deck, you know?
You got on very well because you had to live in close quarters with them. It was difficult at times.
Why?
Well, say for instance you were bumping into somebody's hammock and you were barging through and it didn't please somebody, you'd get a cuss word through at you, you know, what the hell you do, you know, something like that, barging about. But sometimes if you were at sea, you couldn't help but barge about because if the ship was rolling, you'd knock into them, irrespective of the hammocks rolling.
I mean, did it cause fights? I mean, you know, if people...
I think I've only ever known one real fight. And that was between me and I think a South African Killick.
Now, what caused that?
Well, he was picking on this young kid. We had a young lad on board. He was only young, and he was from my part of the country, otherwise from up north. He was from Sunderland. And he was picking on him for no apparent reason.
Now, Killick, that's a leading seaman.
Leading seaman. And I said to this leading seaman, I said, look, bloody, leave him alone. And I said, don't talk to me like that. I said, I'll talk to you however I like. And he said something about taking me up on the after deck, where traditionally disputes were settled. I said, you won't dare take me up with your stripe off. So he took his top off. It's not his stripe, his Killick badge, which was an anchor. So he took it off. I said, right, come on then. I went up to, well, I got a hell of a pummeling, but my back was bruised. I was up against the locker doors and he was pummeling me. But I got a few shots in. And anyway, the next day, I had bruises on my back. But this South African, he had a couple of good shiners. So I must have got a couple of them. But I reckon I come off worse, you know. But anyway, after that, we were all right. You know, we got it off our chest.
And he left the lad alone?
Oh, he left the lad alone, yes.